Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Oh, awesome. That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Steve! What's going on, dude?
You're overly excited today.
Well,
what's the problem?
You know, can I tell you why?
Why?
Can I tell you why?
Why?
All right, so we're in this. So normally we're in your dressing room when we record these, and that's nice.
It is nice.
I mean, it smells a little like Axe body spray and sweat.
That's true.
But we are, you know, we've been doing this for about a year now, and this feels as profesh as it's ever been.
Please don't shorten the word profesh.
No, that's what the kids do. No, they abbreviate to make it sound cooler and more up to date.
Okay.
Everything's up to date with Stephen Bradford. So when you make musical references, it sounds even more up to date.
Yeah, sure it doesn't. You're so stupid.
So we're in the offices of Podcast One, our new home.
Whoop, whoop.
And,
Podcast One.
It's very exciting to be here.
And what's more exciting is we have our first guest here.
Right.
Live at Podcast One.
Right. It's pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting. And it's a guy that I've known for a long time.
Yeah.
Who is an amazing person, first and foremost, mm-hmm. but a phenomenal actor.
Yes.
And I didn't get to work with him when we were both on ABC. We did cross paths a few times, and obviously we knew a lot of the same people. But I did get to work with him when I was on Young and the Restless, which was absolutely amazing.
Back when you wore color.
That's right. Yeah, I wore. That was the difference.
That was the difference.
The acting wasn't different. It was just a blue T-shirt and a black T-shirt.
It was great.
Yeah, it was
amazing. Your range is amazing.
Thank you so much, you little bastard. This guy. So without further ado, we have an amazing guest, and I love this guy, Michael Knight.
Michael E. Knight. Come on.
Michael. Oh, do I have to say E? What's the E? Michael Knight.
No, the E. The
put that mic up there, Michael Knight.
Put the mic. Michael E. Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to talk
into it. Speak into the little phone thing. Yeah, all
Michael
right.
E. Knight. What's E for?
It's
excellent.
Excellent. Ever ready. Yeah,
there you go.
Everybody always asks me about that. I was a part of a whole generation back in the 80s.
Is this the SAG-AFTRA thing?
Yeah, no, we,
it
yeah,
is,
because
right?
there was
I had to do the same thing.
But there was a male adult film actor named Michael Knight. And in those days, if you had the same name, they would let you add a middle initial.
Right.
Like, for instance, like, and I always loved this story, Michael J. Fox, his real name is Michael Albert Fox, but he didn't want to go around saying Michael A. Fox, so he just put in the J.
Right. Yeah. That's amazing.
And I started out as Michael E. Knight, and there was a little bit of a hiccup when, you know, I sort of crossed over, did a couple of movies, and I dropped the Michael E. for some reason. I was a Michael Knight, and this guy came after me, and there was a whole. But people got to know me as Michael E., so it just kind of stuck.
Were you after before SAG, or SAG before after, or Equity?
I was after. That's a good question. I was after before SAG.
Yeah, for people that listening that probably don't know this, AFTRA. Anyone that does film and TV now, we're all in the same union. But in the old days,
Federation Television and Radio.
Television and Radio.
Right,
so
exactly.
It would be your news broadcasters, your
daytime.
Radio personalities, and daytime.
Yeah. Game shows.
Yeah. So and then like primetime TV and movies were the Screen Actors Guild. Now we've all merged. We used to carry three different cards. Now
yeah.
I used to carry two cards.
That's right.
And you had to pay an initiation fee for each one, which was a really great time. But
when they merged, you know, one of the people writing letters, do I get money back?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. How much is in my retirement now since you merged? Is it double?
Right.
Yeah.
But when I joined Equity, I couldn't be Brad Anderson. Because Brad Anderson was a very successful
that was
Fosse
it. That
actor.
Was part of my problem too. Because in one union, I was Michael E. And right. then I went into the, because it was, I was going into SAG. I said Michael Knight. And he went, no. There was, this is where the hiccup happened.
Yeah.
So I actually had to go before a board and they say, you know. And the guy, the other guy didn't show up. And they said, okay, so what does he do?
It's like getting a traffic ticket and the cop doesn't show up.
And
you
he goes, yeah, you get your name. You get to keep
your
name. You
got your name back.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I was Stephen. I had to do, because there were Steve Burton. I had to do Stephen J. Burton.
Is it like your middle name?
Well, because my Jack. Jack's my first name, so I had to just switch it.
That's pretty cool.
So everybody says Michael J. Fox. So I'm like, hey Stephen J. Burton.
I feel like people choose J. Like that's the initial of choice that anybody
right,
does.
Right.
If you have to add something else, everybody adds
so
a J.
He will be Bradford J. Anderson,
from now on. In Equity, I'm Bradford William Anderson, because even Bradford Anderson wasn't far enough from Brad Anderson.
Oh gosh.
So they're like, you got to put your middle name in there. And I was like, I don't want to be a 3-part namer. I'm not ready for that.
Especially in different unions. It's like, what's my contract? You know, right. It's like, you got to fill. And God knows, I mean, if there's a way things can screw up, the minute they have to pay you, if something can screw up, it'll screw up.
It'll screw up. So anyway, but Michael E. Knight.
Michael
E. Knight. Yeah, and it's like you and I go back. I'm trying to remember. I think I met you. God, did I meet you in 87, 88? I forgot.
No, it's probably not that. I appreciate that. I was still in high school.
No.
Thank you,
he was
Michael.
The guy in the parking lot that was waving to you.
No, it was the second. No, when did you start?
Hey, little boy.
No, when did you start? Because
91.
Okay, it was 91. Because you're right. Absolutely right. Because I was working with Maurice. I was working with Maurice in 88.
So
88, 90.
Wait, yeah, so.
And so Maurice was the guy, and we stayed to be very, very dear friends. Maurice Bernard.
Yeah, he loves you.
I remember him calling. We were talking about life, and you know, he debated about whether or not he's. By the way, the only soap actor I've ever known. I think
who's 5'9"?
No, he's in the Actor's Studio.
He is
a card carrying member of the
Actor's
Studio.
That's a big deal, by the way.
That is a huge deal. Yeah. You know. So anyway,
that's a big deal.
Respect the hell out of him. So he was like he debated about going to because. I forgot the name of the character.
Nico.
Like, Nico.
Yeah.
And they have offered me this gig on General Hospital. Should I do it? And I said, yeah. And then about a year later, 2 years later, he calls me up and says, I'm working with this kid. And I want you to because, you know, we always – everybody jokes about what we do. I mean,
right.
It's like delivering the mail. It's like delivering – sometimes, depending on the script you get that day, it's like delivering cartoons at a dead run. You know what I mean? you don't have a time to sit back and edit. And I remember him saying, yeah, I'm doing this thing. I'm kind of like a bad guy they don't know. And I'm working with this young kid who's like literally green behind the ears, but he has so much talent.
Right. So much potential. I still say that about him.
Thank you, Bradford. Thank you. He's so amazing. Yeah. He's,
waiting for your ship to arrive.
By the way, zero Emmys. To my right. To the guy to my right, zero Emmys.
You are a good man. Steve Burton, you are a good man. You're one of the nicest guys I've ever known. And I got to say, people, I was really worried about doing today because – what are you talking about? I mean, it's like, how's things going? Great. Like, what are you doing in Los Angeles? I watch a lot of Netflix.
like, what are we
Netflix
doing?
Netflix. Everybody does. That's all we do.
It's like, as a matter of fact, when you text me about doing the
podcast. Yeah, you had to pause. Would you pause?
Yeah,
no. Watching?
He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching a Korean sitcom on Netflix.
Life is amazing.
I think it was a North Korean sitcom.
Oh, my gosh. So even funnier.
That's amazing.
That good? And he was like, that good? Yeah. But I have to say, what I remember most about what we do is the people we work with. Like, that's what comes back to me. Like it's been a really amazing run, and some of the nicest people I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
So where are you from? That's where we're going to start.
I was raised. I was born in. Did
you come a little closer to the mic?
I was born in New Jersey.
Don't be afraid of that thing.
Don't be afraid of Mike. But you. I was raised in different parts of California. When I was a young kid, I was in Berkeley, and then I was in East Bay, and then I grew up. Spent most of my time, my teenage years, in Ojai, which isn't too far from here.
Yeah, Ojai is amazing, and it must have been because it's kind of a small community now. Still,
yeah.
I mean, then it must have been like
it was
Mayberry.
There was nothing
hippie
out there.
Town. Or was it even that?
Kind of, sort of. It was basically Orange Orchards and Avocado Crisp. Basically, before it had two claims to fame, before the age of the internet was. One, I think it was where the $6 million woman came from. They made
Lindsay
her.
Wagner.
Lindsay Wagner.
Yes, how'd I pull that one out?
Wow, look
shut
at you.
Your mouth.
I love it.
You
I
better
love it.
Be careful
I love it.
Today.
I was going to say Linda Carter, and I knew it was wrong.
Good for so. You, man. Good for
Go
you.
Ahead. I'm a student here. I'm learning from the master.
But they did in 19, I forgot which one it was, Lost Horizons. And it was, I don't know if it was the black and white or it was the color one. I mean, we're talking really, really, really far back. It was supposed to be Shangri-La. In other words, they needed a place that was close enough to Los Angeles so they could ship a crew.
Sure.
And because of the mountains and stuff, and just it is really, really beautiful.
It is
beautiful. Like this valley.
Yeah, it's a valley.
Like,
you like drive in. And
when did the Inn and Spa get built up there? Was that later?
Yeah, the Inn and Spa, I guess, I think they've been around. They have to have been around for like 30, 35 years for a while.
It's one of our favorite places to go.
Yeah, and they remodeled.
Especially
so
when
really
I
nice.
Was working.
And when I was working.
Yeah,
yes.
When, working, when I was working, it was a great place.
It was a great place.
Now we're at the Holiday Inn Express in Pomona. It's really a nice place.
When you're working.
Yes.
It's
yes,
got
yes.
free danishes. That's what it's come to?
Dude, free breakfast. Can't look past that, man. That's amazing.
That's what it's come to.
So, but that's where you spent your formative years.
That's where my formative years. My dad was a teacher up there, and I eventually ended up going to that school. But then they moved up to San Francisco, and after that, I basically ended up going east to college to Connecticut, and then
really,
yeah. And I was
you went to Wesleyan. I read that.
Yeah,
that's good. So
look at you doing homework.
So
who is this guy?
Middletown,
Connecticut.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. Yeah,
I worked
yeah.
at Goodspeed Opera House one summer, and that was like some. We had to go to Middletown to get things.
No, that's where it's. I was Middletown cracked me up. It's like where the mafia sends their grandparents to retire. I mean,
yeah.
It was like it was really, really quiet. It was beautiful,
yeah.
But it was a great school.
Yeah.
But I was there for 3 years, and I was acting so much. I
were you acting in school?
Yeah, a lot.
So, okay. Did you go to Wesleyan specifically to study acting?
That was part of it. Yeah.
So I mean, on the West Coast, not everybody out here knows about East Coast colleges. How did you make the jump from Ojai to Wesleyan?
Because I wanted to, I really wanted a change. You know, it's like basically I grew up in a very insular place. I mean, my school, I think, was like 200 kids or something. And I wanted something different. And
sure.
I wanted to see the East Coast. I wanted
right.
to change. And I applied to a bunch of schools. I think I got into UC Santa Barbara. I forgot. But I applied to like Dartmouth. I applied to Northwestern. I applied to Wesleyan, and you know, Wesleyan. Dartmouth said no. Wesleyan said yes, and they had this amazing, amazing art facility.
Yeah,
there. I mean, for a very small university, their art complex even then it was brand new back then. And there was a guy that was there named Bill Francisco, who was one of the most talented men. I mean, really, just brilliant guy who I was. Lucky enough to work with. And from there, I was doing so much theater. Around the end of my junior year, I go, I'm really sort of like, I'm blowing a lot of money.
Yeah.
To do. I took a chance and I transferred some credits and I ended up going to New York. I didn't want to take the plunge right off the bat. And there was a 2 year program at a place called Circle in the Square.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They're down on Broadway 50th. And,
yeah.
I applied and they took me. So I transferred my senior year. And then so by the time I was 21, I was in New York.
Okay. And at Circle in the Square, I mean, that's great. I mean, they produce their own work there. They have a great training program.
Oh, it was a Broadway house. It was really,
right.
And it was cool because when you're a student, they would have, one of the things they would do because it was a Broadway theater in the round, they would have who was ever like, doing a play at that time, they would say, hey, do you want to come talk to our students? And they'd load us up once a week and we'd go up and we'd hear from, like Colleen Dewhurst was one of the coolest people I ever, it was one of the neatest things I ever saw. A bunch of people, like Kevin Klein came and talked to us when he was doing Pirates and was like the right next door and was the funniest, most charming person I've ever seen. So I got exposed to a lot of stuff, and we technically weren't supposed to be you weren't supposed to be like going out for stuff that paid.
Sure.
But a lot of us in our second year were like, you know, it's crunch
right
time
there.
And I got tired of waiting on tables, so I started doing commercials at 22, and then All My Children was really quick out of the
wow.
I think it was 6 months out of Circle in the Square by the time time. All my children.
Well, because I saw when I did my research. You
got to do it. Yeah. You got to flick. Okay. You have to flick your hair as you do it.
You were up for a younger actor. I knew you went to college, but you still had a. You still were there early enough to be nominated for younger actor, which is
I was one of those
25.
Right? I was one of those. Was it always 25? I don't know. Did you always play up? I was one of those guys that played down. I mean, I was like Jimmy Stewart standing sideways till I was 30 years old. I always looked younger.
Sure. Yeah.
So even though I was 22, I think I was actually on the show. I was playing 18.
I see. Yep.
I was playing high school.
Well,
so
still, you don't have any wrinkles. Like,
well, that's because I'm fat. I discovered the secret is it's like
keep eating,
keep eating. Gain 5 pounds a year. You'll never get wrinkled.
You explode.
No, you have like alabaster skin. It's lovely. And you grew up.
He said flicking his hair.
Yes. Yeah. He did.
So, but I can see how you would play younger than you were.
Yeah, I was 20, yeah. When I started, I was 21 and I was playing 16.
You were. I always thought you played up. Just because, like, you were always.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment, but.
No, because you were always like the. The guy. You
whatever.
Know, the guy.
The guy.
No, I was Sonny's bitch. That's what I was.
No.
For a long time. And it's paid off, and I'm excited about that still. I'm excited.
I'd be happy to be somebody's bitch. It's been 10 years since I showed. I'd be very happy to be somebody's bitch right now.
Well, in the hierarchy of bitches, I'm pretty low, though. Because if you're Sonny's,
what do you mean?
Well, if I'm.
Watch your mouth.
Well, if you're
my bitch.
That's what I'm saying. If I'm your bitch and you're Sonny's bitch.
Yeah, you're Sonny's bitch twice removed.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
On the food chain, you're somewhere around bitch creosote.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
So you, 6 months out of college, you're making money and having a good
that
job,
was
right?
And I was gonna ask you too, because you and I have shared some common history. I mean, the fact is, and you too, but I was gonna say we go back to a time like in the 80s when you don't really know how lucky you are until the world changes. You know what
right.
I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember like getting the job, not really knowing how powerful the allure of soaps. You know, and I was thinking because I remember watching,
especially in New York.
Oh, it was huge.
It was humongous.
You can have a more well-rounded career doing soaps because you can do a reading at night. You can do someone's workshop. You could even do a play at night.
Oh, a lot of people on All My Children used to do that. I mean, yeah. I did it. I did it. I've done it a couple times. I've done some off-Broadway when I was there. But I noticed that, like, I had no idea how lucky I was because I remember coming on and doing, like, you know, I think I started in December of 82. My first air show was in 83. And
so you're talking like that's
really, early. But I mean,
that's honestly, just to put it in perspective, that's when Luke and Laura's wedding was.
Luke and Laura, I literally came in. We had just, because I remember when Tony and Jeannie were on the cover of Time magazine, and I thought, holy shit! Can I say
yeah, sure.
I mean, it's like it's like soaps had gone mainstream. It was it was a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was coming in on the tail end of a storyline of Kim Delaney. God, there was just an amazing group
of
people.
She was on
Kim Delaney, Dorothy Lyman, Larry Law. Darnell Williams. There had been this just amazing storyline, just cooking on all sets. We used to do summers were huge. I remember like the kids would always work in the summer. And I was sort of an addendum. I remember that my character had been the younger brother of Jenny, and they brought him back as their older brother. There was a guy named John Dunn had played him up to 15.
Okay.
And then he brought me in at 18. And man, I had no idea until like they shipped us out to do AM Chicago when it was still Oprah. And I just remember thinking,
that's so cool.
This is like going from being like, I wonder if I'm ever going to work, to feeling like one of the Beatles.
A rock star. You became a rock star.
You started to feel like, wow, this is really, this sort of feels real good. But the thing is, to answer your question, I'm sorry about this.
No, you're fine. This is great.
I got lucky so early.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 22, 23 years old and you're paying the rent and all of your friends are literally doing two gigs. I mean, the gig economy back in the 80s, and they had to, I mean, or friends of mine that get fired from the soap.
Sure,
basically, and had some pretty lean years. From a very early age, I was spoiled because I knew what it was like to pay the rent doing in my chosen profession.
Yeah.
So, which was kind of like a blessing and a curse because I had a hard time shaking it off. There was always a home waiting for me, so I kept going back.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, especially in New York, because just talking to people like you who were on soaps in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, Maurice loved it.
Oh, yeah. It was a really –
For him, like, especially when he became Sonny, like, yeah, to go back during the Emmys when they would red carpet the streets,
sure,
for us,
yeah,
for Radio City Music
back
Hall.
In the day, man.
And was he like, would be – I'd, yeah, be like, where are you going? It was like John Travolta. He goes, I'm going to Strut. And he would just be like – he'd be like walking down the street and people like, Sonny, Sonny. Oh, I mean, it was, yeah, amazing, right? It was
You guys
amazing.
Were like – and I have to say, the one thing that used to piss me off
– What do you mean, dude? You're tad.
No, not GH, I have to say, because we did back in the day. Remember we did softball games and,
oh,
stuff,
sure,
like that?
I'm so, I mean, sad I missed the sports.
Oh, this, well, no, you didn't
sports
miss much.
Sports and drinking. Go ahead.
Well, that's more what
drinking
I meant.
Was the sport.
Oh, well, just,
trust me, you're
I'm
doing
very
fine.
Competitive you're, when it comes to
you're doing
drinking.
Fine in that category right now.
This I can do. Yeah, no, but we used to do these, you know, go out on the road, do these things. I remember, like, going on the road with, like, Ken.
Oh,
know,
yeah.
And Steve Bond and stuff. And these guys literally would cause
Steve
riots.
Yes.
We would, like, okay, we're going to stop and get a Big Mac or something.
Right.
This happened, you know, in, like, Buffalo.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I thought we were a big deal.
Upstate
and then,
New York,
and,
GH is a big deal.
And then, yeah, and then Ken walked in. And, I mean, I am talking people getting out of their cars in the parking lot, mobbing into this. I literally – wondering if we were going to be able to get out of the parking
get
lot.
Get that freaking Big Mac.
Yeah.
He, I mean, let's have
priority. Get for free. Like, yeah, exactly. Scott. Do we have to pay?
Oh, sure. Right. That too. Yeah.
Ken, I was about to say Scotty Baldwin. Ken reminds me every day of what a big star he was.
Used to be somebody.
No. He honestly, people don't understand in context how big Ken was. With,
oh, a lot of people. I mean,
you know,
I have to,
and with Laura. I mean, it was,
I listen.
It was,
I remember when
Baldwin
I
and Laura.
One of the coolest days ever in my business is when she rolled in to do. I think she was. We had her for. I had her for about 2 years or
oh,
a year.
Yeah, on All My Children.
On All My
yeah,
Children.
Yeah.
And I got to just. She was so sweet, and yeah. She, there was
we're
one day.
About Jeannie Francis.
Yeah, Jeannie Francis.
Yeah.
We were just hanging out, and I forgot what set we were on or whatever, and I was like, you know, can I ask you about like those days when it was. When, you know, they made the cover of Time magazine,
sure.
And all of a sudden, you know, Luke and Laura were getting married. She was marrying the guy who raped her or
Dude,
whatever.
You should have done a podcast with her.
And it was – well, but she was like telling stories. She was yeah. like, it was crazy. And yeah. people weren't just drinking, you know, mm-hmm. on the road. There was
sure.
stuff going on. It was the crazy 80s and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
heyday,
she still finds stuff in the walls.
They do.
You could scrape
no,
the
they
walls.
Do. They do yeah. find stuff.
Yeah. Oh, is
they'll,
that a, is that a,
like they'll find – like
stashes, somebody stashed stuff behind
from 20 years
is
ago.
Is that
no,
like,
nope. Is that is that baby powder?
Nope.
Is
no
that
lie.
Powdered sugar? Nope.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
man.
It's crazy. So you were there. You were there.
And Tony, I have to. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, dude. Fine.
But I remember like the first time I met Tony. Yeah. And we were – I forgot we were doing – it was – we used to do all the affiliate stuff. Remember they used to
yeah,
fly
they,
us
– to affiliate
well, they'd
station,
fly it to
– and they have a dinner for the affiliates.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it was like a big deal. I mean, yeah. The business changed and bigger minds than mine will tell you how. But I remember we used to meet the only time I met the GH people is we'd go out on the road and we'd do
sure.
events or we would do these affiliate things. And we were doing something on a television show and there was Tony and he was sitting around a table like this. And he got up and he walked across the room and he said, oh, Michael, so nice to meet you. Because by that time I'd been in a tad. But to me, you don't understand. I mean,
sure.
I was in a house with four women and two men at Wesleyan.
Yeah.
My junior year. And shit used to stop.
Right.
I mean, half of the house intentionally didn't have classes on Monday and the
sure.
other half didn't have classes on Friday so that you could find out
sure.
what was going on.
Yeah.
And these girls, the girls were just, they would like sunbathe and while General Hospital was on, they had a huge beach umbrella and they would put it and they would,
like
it, they would
yeah,
take
right?
it, take it off the stanchion. And so the thing was about this far off the ground, about a couple feet off the ground and they would do their backs. Well, GH was, and there was literally a 50-foot extension cord out into the yard with a television buried
under
this.
Do they
do
their backs for an hour?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no.
That
so,
was the old days, dude, where you put just like Crisco on your body. Oh, there was not even.
Bande
like,
de Soleil.
Yeah.
Bande de Soleil was Crisco with like food coloring
oh,
in it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I know. Tony's a big deal, man.
But so, I mean, and so that was surreal. And I mean, there are people like you, give you a compliment, like Maurice and stuff. There are people, because you can always make fun of shows, because it's what we do. I have always, I don't know how you guys feel, but I, what you do to survive is the first thing you do when you get a script is you come at, you basically take half of the melodrama away in rehearsal when you're going through it. And then what happens is you bring back as much as you just, you walk up to that line and go, okay, I got it. You know, you're building up to the tag shot and all this stuff, but it's like, you're basically learning how to cut something that is over the top on the page. Well, and there are guys like Tony, like you, like Maurice, that basically they make it look, David Canary was another David, one. They make it, look amazing. Easy. And it's like, I'm really happy to stand side by side with these guys in terms of, you know, what I did for a living for
so long.
You
always brought a different element that, you know, you have, you had the comedic element.
Well, that was by accident. That was basically, that happened because, you're right, because they had, I was supposed to be God's Vengeance on Marcy Walker, who was another phenomenal actress.
Breakdown?
Yeah, I was God's Vengeance, like, because Kim Delaney was just epic. I think Kim Delaney was the only person who ever, ever sort of nudged up into Susan Lucci territory in terms of the just the TVQ, which was a rating, I guess, they had for actors.
Yeah. Focus groups, baby.
Focus groups. And so kind of what made her work is she had Dorothy Lyman, who was just the most amazing character actor. She had Kim Delaney, Marcy Walker, who was the villainess.
Who
of the
did
piece.
Marcy Walker play?
She played Liza Colby.
Okay.
And it was it just fell into place. It was the perfect storyline. I'm trying to remember. Oh, and so I was initially cast as one of those guys who, you know, I remember I used to wear these eyes-eyed shirts with the collar turned up. And I just, I just felt like an ass. I was like, and I remember I had a line, one of the first lines that I had to say to Marcy was, I really dig you, baby. I'm not feeding you a line. I'm giving it to you straight. And I went to my producer and I said, I have done, been acting a while, cannot say this and not sound like a total asshole. I can't do it. She goes, well, what do you want to do with it? And I said, well, can I make her laugh?
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm going to give you a little bit of, just a little bit of a tether here. You show me what you can do. And it kind of evolved from there.
Right.
And the writers were so good. God, I'm Agnes Nixon. I can't say enough about her and the people that she brought up. Bill Bell, Agnes Nixon. I think soaps were as good as they were because these were two master storytellers that had studied under Irma Phillips, who started Guiding Light on radio.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
So these, between the pair of them, between Agnes and Bill, I mean, I think they created like, what, 80% of all of data.
A legacy. Legacy.
So, and the people that Agnes had brought up as writers went, oh, you know, what they would do is, I don't know about you, but back in the day, this kind of fell away, but they would like, they would give you, we used to call them coffee scenes, whereas a new character, they would basically introduce you slowly. You would sort of like ease your way into a scene and they'd sort of figure out where the chemistry was and they'd go, okay, this is where we're going to bite. This is where we're going to go.
I see, sure.
And when the comedy thing came up, I think initially there were a couple the writers didn't like it, but eventually it evolved to a place where they were writing. I used to like people say, "Well, how much of that stuff do you improvise?" And I was like, "Not a lot."
Right? Yeah. Talent, man. You brought something different as a leading man than anybody else had ever brought.
I don't know. I think I was stealing stuff. I was like, I grew up watching, and I remember. I grew up watching like really amazing sitcoms like All in the Family and stuff. And I remember stealing, like doing Carol O'Connor.
Yeah.
He had a take he would do when he would look at Stapleton. And I remember sort of doing that in scenes with Bill Timoney, which was sort of my comic foil and stuff.
Yeah.
And it stuck. And I actually had a fan write a letter going, you know, you're doing Carol O'Connor. And I was like, good for you that you know that.
That's amazing. Yeah. Because you always reminded me just watching and of kind of like a John Ritter, where you can do physical comedy, you could do comedy, but then you can do the dramatic stuff, which was easy for you. But it was just such an interesting thing to watch. It's something that Bradford brought to our show was a whole nother side of, like, his character was never somebody who really is ever on daytime. Right, because he's funny and it's just quirky character that was never really supposed to be around, and he did such a great job. But to watch a leading man, and especially at that time, there wasn't, you know, it was very melodramatic.
Oh, always.
It was always, you know, life and death. And, you know, and to bring humor to something, because that's what we always learn in acting class anyways.
Yeah. Right?
Find the humor. Where's the humor?
If you can get him to laugh, you can get him to cry.
Right. So it's like, that's, you know, kudos to you for that, because that was – something new.
But that... back in the day, we used to, I was going to say, one of the things, now this is before your time, but one of the things we used to do that Agnes insisted on doing is there was always, let's say we had, what did we do? We did six acts? Was it five acts or six?
Six.
It was six acts. For a good 10 years, like 80 to 90, there was always one storyline that was humorous.
Right.
And that's why Dorothy Lyman just took off. She came in and she was so fabulous as Opal. You know, she was just so over the mark. You know, everybody was like going, what's that about? She just, she taught me.
Yeah.
She was the one, I remember her looking at me and I said, God, this comedy, this stuff you do, it's courageous because, you know, you got this whole, you know what it's like. There's an army of people waiting to get this stuff done.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, and she would like, no, I'm going to do this. And she's like, baby, bring it. You know what I'm saying? You got an idea. You think it'll make it better. You only get one shot to do this. You got one rehearsal. Put it. She said, there ain't no point in having anything in something in store if you don't put it in the window.
Right.
And so I lucked out. I mean, I came up under her, and the comedy thing is just an offshoot. Just I literally, I had no idea how lucky I was.
And to be with somebody who's fearless.
Oh, she was
huge, right? Yeah. Because you know, you don't have a lot of time to create. You know, especially now, but then
now, it's even less now.
Less
now it's like,
you know,
we don't even get the blocking. Now it's like, it's like literally, yeah, you walk on set and it's like, now it's, now the trick is they're trying to get a full year in the can in less time. So it's like, we used to do a show a day. Now
right,
it's
day,
like, now you do 7-8 shows a week.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's like, here's your mark. You know,
right.
Bring it. You know,
yeah,
do
right.
it.
And you don't even. So if you want to bring that stuff, there's no conversations about it. You just do it. And
well, hopefully you bring it up. You know, you do it. You talk to your director and say, look.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about putting in shtick. We're not talking about in spit takes and stuff. But it may be a line here or something.
Yeah.
Because what you're saying is, in the old days, I went off the beam here. Agnes used to write in these. They would do film fantasies. I remember they would do a version like they did on Carol Burnett. You know what? Mm-hmm. They would do spoofs of famous movies where they would take your character. Oh, you're in love with Hillary and stuff. Okay, well, you and Carmen Thomas, who is I adored back in those, are so sweet. Close. She looks like Vivian Leigh now. She's just an amazing actress. She and I ended up doing, I think, a Gone with the Wind fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say that, actually.
And we did, I think we did a Casablanca fantasy. They would write this stuff into the show because they figured that comedy, you're absolutely right, if it's all melodrama, then it kind of it loses
you need to
a
break
little
it a little bit
break
just to go to build it back up, right?
Yeah. So you did a 4 or 5 years your first time there?
I was there from, I think it's a good question. I think I was there from 82 to 86
and then
left for 2 years. And then I was 88 to 90 and then came out. I was in Los Angeles again, met Catherine. We got married and I think I was back on All My Children by 92.
And then all the way
to the exit.
To the exit.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you first, why'd you first leave?
Just because I was young and I wanted to give it a shot. And I got really, really lucked out. I went up for this movie. I'd done little bits. I'd done character stuff in films, but I'd never had a lead. And I lucked out. I went up for a movie that was sort of a takeoff. It was a spin. It was basically Splash, the movie about the mermaid,
Tom Hanks movie,
but it was with Day with an Angel. And that was, I think it was 86, 87. And I ended up booking it. And I was like, well, you know, it's 10 weeks down in Wilmington and, you know, you had to leave the show. So I was like, okay. And after that, like I say, the curse was I always had a family there. I knew people. I knew what it was like to make a living. And whenever, you know, I was never good at sitting now I don't have a choice, but in Los Angeles, sitting by the phone
around,
to ring, you know
right.
what I mean? So
yeah.
they were like, you want to come home? You want to come back? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I had a blast. I mean, and the second time I came around, I got to work with Maurice.
Yeah.
That's where, and oh God, I'm blanking on people's names. This is one thing that happens. There have been so many people. Lauren Holly was working
Lauren
with
Lauren Holly was there, correct.
Was there where with Maurice, and Maurice and I became really, really, really good friends. He's a good man. He really is. But anyway, so it's just I don't know about you guys, but one of the things that I always enjoyed about soaps was it is a family. And I mean, you get to know people because the rest of our business is you're the new kid on the block. You basically, if you're lucky, you get a series that lasts for 5 years. You get to know the cast and crew. I had that for like off and on for 29 years.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's an anomaly in what we do for sure.
Yeah.
To be able to go to the same place, see the same people. You know, and especially, you know, that's the thing that I always talk about is, you know, New York would be always like, oh, GH is cool. It's out in L.A. It's awesome. And then we were like, man, New York's cool because we're at the Emmys and, you know, people really love us here and it'd be fun and really dangerous in your 20s.
I have to tell you, absolutely. I got to tell you, having a steady job, being on a soap opera in New York in the 20s was – it's a family show, so I'm not going to swear, but it was amazing. I mean, I got to say, you don't know how lucky you are till the world turns. So it was a great place to be. It really was.
Seems like it would have been fun for me to be there.
Does New York feel like home to you? I mean, because you spent so much.
Everything has sort of changed because nothing in life stays static. The fact is, I know friends of mine that have gone back to New York. Yeah. I think everybody was really upset when they came to us. I remember the day they called us up. Brian Franz said, okay, we're going to move. We want to save money. We're moving to Burbank. We're moving the show.
Oh, that's right. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And everybody was like, and that was a big deal. It took the cast like 6 weeks. They gave us 6 weeks to do this. Here is whatever it was, like $10,000. Yeah. You know, basically take what
pack your stuff,
find a place to live, find a rental, take your kids out of school, do this whole thing. You know,
take your kids out.
I know. Yeah. Well, you know what that's like. Time after, and do you?
I have two little girls.
So you know what it's like.
Imagining that, would be
saying, okay, you know, you're
with no guarantee,
right? Exactly. That's the other thing.
That's gonna last.
I mean, when you guys were moving out to California, did you think, okay, well, we
that was the first thing I asked Brian Franz in the cast meeting. I said, like, well, what's the commitment? And they went, you know, we can't give you a commitment. And to be fair. I don't know about you, but comparing notes with you, because you and I go back to the same – I'm older than you, obviously. But I was going to say you're two generations under me. You say you're one.
I am.
But we did really – I really felt the world change. You know what I mean? Yeah. After, like, the O.J. trial.
It was the O.J. That changed everything.
It was this habit. Soaps were this thing that people worked into their psyche, and it's like – some people they videotaped it or whatever. Right. But after O.J. – It just broke the habit, and you could feel like the numbers sort of leaking out of the bottom of the boat. And by the time the internet came in, you know, because when I started, HBO was an experiment.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, wow, you can pay, you know, an extra $30 a month to see nudity on television. People swear on HBO.
There's no other use for it, really.
Yeah. You know, and nobody had any idea. So, I think we had 5 or 6 TV stations in New York. So it was a big deal.
Of course.
Yeah, it was O.J., the numbers definitely.
I don't think we ever went down dramatically, by the way. You never
regained that audience. And then it really introduced reality TV.
Yes.
Also. Yeah. So there was that
when
switch.
That came in, you could really
– see that, oh, we're going to watch something real. And then people started doing these reality shows.
Yeah.
And the audience faded and more channels.
And let's face it. If you have, let's say, I'm guilty of this too. If you have a cast of like a family.
Yeah.
I mean, as you say, we're building brand. In other words, it's like I am identified with Tad Martin. I've been doing this for 10 years. My salary keeps going up. You have a cast of like how many – now they've winnowed it down. But I mean back when I was – I think even towards the end of the show, I think we still had 32, 33.
30 probably on contract.
Yeah, on contract characters. All you're doing is watching your costs go up as a shrinking audience. So I think that the network was really caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean,
sure.
I think Brian gets vilified for a lot of stuff that he did, and I don't think it's necessarily – he made some bad – he made mistakes like anybody. But he was really stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
He really had to be, you know, we have to take some risk. We either have to invite that young audience back in or we're simply going to.
I don't think they didn't try to invite that younger audience. It's just they didn't laugh.
They certainly did. I mean, we did a whole Sex and the City storyline
with
Rebecca Budig and Alicia Minshew and stuff.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to like, okay, what's working in nighttime? How do we bring this in?
Sure. Yeah.
So.
How do you rip this movie off?
Yeah.
How many times did we do that?
One of my favorite storylines is when we did – we had a sweep storyline that was 24. They even did – I remember that.
Metro Court.
And it was awesome. It was kind of like the coming out storyline for me. I mean
– Coming out?
Yeah. But it was the first time that he and I really cemented
together.
Like a duo of sorts. And it made my character – more valuable. And that's that storyline kind of led to 7 more years.
Do you remember that day? Because I love those moments. Because you must know these too. It's like, you know, something's happened. Because basically, a friend of mine used to say that daytime was the closest to summer stock you were ever going to get in television. Because it's just so fast. Yeah. You don't even think about it. But every once in a while, you get hooked up with a supporting character or something, mm-hmm. or a love interest. And it happened with me and Katie.
Yeah.
When we weren't even supposed to be working together. And then we get hooked up. Our characters got hooked up in the scene in a dress shop. And you just knew that you caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And you know that the writers are out there sitting there, like, watching the monitor going, that
right
for that, and that's a big part of our business, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It
worked because I was such the straight guy,
and
he wasn't.
Yeah,
which cracks me up because most people are like, you are such a buffoon. You are so you're a clown.
I am a buffoon. Yes,
you are one of the funniest people I know, and it's true. Your character is
and he was always the wacky zany one, and it just worked. You know, everything. It just worked.
So when you go out on the road and you do the stage show, do people love finding out that you're like a character?
It's interesting because we've talked about it. It's like, yes. Well, first they get a little angry.
It's like, oh, okay.
Like in New Jersey. Like I went to New Jersey. This is years ago.
This is years ago before they can see you on social media. And
Right.
Nobody really knows who
you
are.
They had no idea. Yeah. They just knew that I was Sonny's. It was me and Maurice in Jersey. At a comedy club called Rascals when we first started.
Rascals!
These appearances at the comedy clubs. And I'm like, oh, it's a comedy club. So, I'll write a little 10 minutes about the show, you know? And they introduced me as Pat. I mean, Sardine, Fire Hazard. We would all be dead if that thing went up because it was so tight. It was 400 packed in like 250. It was just like sardines. They introduced me. It's amazing. And the best feeling ever, you know, the audience. And then I get up and I go, yeah, so, I start doing this thing. And they're like, and dead silence. Dead. You're not Jason. I'm like, what?
What?
Why are you smiling? And I'm like, what? Just stare at us. I'm like,
take off your shirt.
No, not even that. Just stare at us. I'm like, okay, this is going. The crowd's turning on me.
Look out.
And I said, okay, and here's Maurice Bernard.
Yeah, he's like,
everybody, bring him out. And they're like, Sonny. And then he just sits there, you know. Method acting.
See, that's the thing. Okay, that's what most people don't know. Because to me, Maurice is hysterical. Yeah. Most people don't know this about Maurice. It's like he's a phenomenal mimic. He used to call me up in New York, seriously, when he was on the show, and he would leave 5-minute messages, but he wouldn't tip you on. He would be like, "Hi, this is Ramon. I met you in the club, and I was just going to say you gave me your card, and I was wondering if you really meant it. It was like, you know, doing the acting classes because I think you'd be fabulous as a teacher." And he would do 5 minutes and
I
not.
Know.
And I would be
seriously,
like,
he'd leave messages on machines.
I would be.
I this that. Is before Instagram.
When you still have a tape, you know, and I'm rewinding this thing, going, who the hell is it?
Who the heck is this?
And like, if you were lucky at the end of the thing, he would go, ah, no, it's Maurice just messing with you. But he's phenomenal, but he is much more, he's a much more private person.
Yeah, yeah. So he would never get on stage.
He's not going to be the
MC
one to come
host,
out. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So
right.
I was fine doing that, but that's not what people wanted to see. They wanted to see Jason just stand there next to Sonny. But we had to do a Q&A or something, right? So I'm like, oh, I guess because Maurice is just, you know, sitting there on the stool, like, you know.
I always feel like Maurice should have a cigarette. You know,
totally.
I mean, it's a pity he doesn't smoke because he'd be doing the Betty Davis. You know, he'd
so
be like,
I'm like, how do we do this? You know, and the time we would have people write down questions and put it in the hat.
Oh, and you'd pick them out yourself.
And I'd pick them out and read them.
Okay, I got that. All right, I got that. I got on this one. I got you beat because he asked me about this story. But
Well,
John,
please tell me the story and get closer.
Everybody,
to the mic.
Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. It's easy, completely legal, and yes, you can watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free.
Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up.
Yeah, and you can download Pluto TV on all your favorite devices, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream.
So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or just the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in.
Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.
Everybody is, you know, everybody's like, okay, and one thing I found about certainly being, you know, if you live long enough in this business, like humility is in the, you know, humility is in the mail, man.
It's your future.
It's,
right?
it's coming. You know what I mean?
So you will be.
Enjoy the top
humble.
Of the mountain while you're there. Cause,
yes, sir.
They'll be rolling you down the mountain. but so anyway, I remember,
throwing you down.
I remember I remember we used to do, and this was a lot of money back in the day in the 80s. I think we used to do about $1,500 for like a thing where you sign autographs. And I remember somebody said, we want you to do a car show in Detroit.
Yes.
For $5,000. And I was like, $5,000 for autographs? And it was kind of the thing we do where you walk out, you vamp for 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Right.
And then you sign autographs for like 2 or 3 hours and stuff. And, you know, here's your check. And I was like, I'm there.
Right.
You know
what I mean? This is amazing.
So this is 90, no. Yeah, it was my second time on the show. It had to be 88, something like that. I fly to Detroit, first class, the whole nine. They put me up. It's great.
Sure,
it was
yeah.
a suite. And I meet the marketing director. Now, I do to this day, I do not remember this guy's name, but I know he must have been on coke for 3 days because he was the most hyper person I have ever met. And he goes, come here. I want to show you. And he showed me this. It was this, I forgot what it was in, this huge like airplane hangar. It was enormous, you know, and it had like, you know, like the Black Beauty from the Green Hornet and
oh my
Batmobile
gosh.
And all this
had all the memorabilia cars,
amazing memorabilia cars. And he goes, "Come here, I want to show you this." And he takes me backstage and he says, "Look up." And he goes, "There's just this enormous, like the whole ceiling was blue." And I was like, "You know, wow, what is that? Is that kind of? It was way up there. It looks textured." He goes, "Those are balloons, and they have the name, your name." And it, you know, it's like ABC's Michael Knight in a blue thing at this, and when we're gonna vamp and a cue from you, we're gonna drop the balloons and then we're gonna like it. Thunderous applause and we'll break and we'll go to the autographs, right? Yeah. And it was this huge. I remember seeing there was one of those velvet ropes they had at clubs that went all the way down the side. I mean, it literally a quarter of a mile long. And there was a table about like this, and then there was two stacks of autographs, and then there was a pitcher of water and like five Sharpies or whatever. So I'm feeling like, and you can just hear it. There must have been about like 10,000 people at this thing. I mean, like, and we normally get crowds of like, you know, 2,000, 2,500. So this is a big deal. And I'm feeling like Elvis for the day. I'm really feeling good about myself. And I'm getting pumped to go out there. And, you know, it's like, come meet ABC's Michael Knight. So I go, I hit the stage and I skid into place. I'm like, mister, I'm doing 5 minutes on cord whipping alone, you know what I mean? And I got my best material. I'm throwing stuff out there, and just crickets. Nobody moves. They're just staring at me. And I do what you do. I say, well, okay, does anybody got any questions? Because there's me and 10,000 people in stone cold silence, and I can tell the guy that set this up is dying. And he goes, does anybody questions? And this little girl stands up. She goes, you look different on TV. Where's the car?
The marketing
and the course of the worst marketing nightmare in the world. It's like the fans really didn't, you know, Knight Rider was on, I think, CBS. I'm
right,
not quite
right.
sure.
Yeah, but not
people
ABC.
Had said, looked in on paper. They looked at their writer, said, come meet ABC's Michael Knight.
There's at a car show?
At a car show right. in Detroit. And this falls, this flashes across my mental radar, along with, you know, about 20,000 gigajoules of adrenaline. I'm like, oh my God, I'm screwed. And all I can hear is this poor bastard behind me, the marketing guy, going, drop the balloons, drop the balloons. So basically, they do it, and there's just me and 10,000 people and this silent snowfall of balloons bouncing off of people's heads.
Oh,
and I was like,
it's a shame there were no cell phone cameras.
And I heard, I heard the guy going, get him off, get him off, get him off. So it's like, I came off and I was like,
it's going to be a riot.
I sweat through my clothes. I was like, I'm just going to go back to the airport and just get out of town. He goes, no, damn it. You know, I signed you to do autographs. You're going to do autographs. So for 3 hours, I sat at that table at the end of that stanchion, and people just would walk by going,
huh?
And finally,
not
this,
asking for your autograph, just looking.
I'll never forget this guy. The sweetest guy, the security guard, was this 6'7" black guy, the nicest guy. David something, I forgot his name. And it's like after about 30 minutes of just sitting there feeling like a total ass, he goes, I hear him say quietly under his breath, it's okay, Ted. You want to go see the Batmobile?
That's awesome.
So in every life, you know what I mean? It's just, it's going to be, that was the most humbled I ever was.
Oh,
doing
what we man.
Did. It's amazing. You did have hair not dissimilar from David Hasselhoff. That wasn't as tight of a curl, but you had some.
I don't, you know what the amazing thing is, I turned around and married his ex-wife, you know, I married Catherine. The one time I ever made it in the National Enquirer is Catherine and I got married and there was a little blurb and a friend of mine sent me.
Michael Knight.
Catherine Hicklin divorces one Michael Knight and marries another one. It's like, you should have bought a lottery ticket. And I met him. I remember meeting him we had the studio 66. So remember they would do the view on one side and we were down on the other side of the studio. So I used to see amazing people. I remember being in the elevator with Tom Cruise, and I was like, yeah, there are worse jobs. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
But I remember David was there doing something, and I walked up, and I said, you know, I'm the other Michael Knight. And for a minute, he gave me this weird, like, oh, here we go. Do you want an audio? Here's a 20. Buy yourself something pretty. Yeah. Get out of my face.
You want to see my fan fiction book?
Yeah.
But
he was very charming guy. But yeah. I thought
the
odds of doing something like that happening is like,
That's amazing.
That is amazing. So do you still go back to New York?
I haven't been back probably in 6 years. And you asked me this, is like, I did consider New York home, but I have to say the friends of mine that, you know, did the move out to Burbank and then turn around and went back.
Yeah.
I said, you know, what's it like? And he said, it's kind of like you can go back, but you can't go home. I mean, the city has changed a lot. The technology has changed our world in so many ways. Yeah. You know, like Amazon has totally gutted a lot of what was.
Are you up to date with technology or not?
No, yet? I'm not on Twitter. I'm not one of those. I know what my dad felt. Now I know what my dad felt like when I tried to get him to teach him email, you know. It's like,
sure, yeah.
Hashtag what? I mean, I remember Catherine trying to explain hashtag. How hashtags work. I still don't get it, you know.
Yeah, it is kind of I don't understand the nuts and bolts of it so much. I just know that it's fun to do.
It is. No, it's the nature of everything now. And I think it's sort of like, in terms of me, who sort of spent a lot of time sitting by the phone. Unfortunately, it's the nature of, I mean, people cast work now based on followers, you know, I forget the name of the guy that worked with us on Young and the Restless, who was so good about it. Anyway, he was trying to explain to me why it was our responsibility now to do what you guys
are
doing.
Was it Christian?
Christian LeBlanc.
Yeah. It was Christian LeBlanc. Yeah, he's got this stuff wired, man. Yeah. And he had the whoobie stick. You know what I mean? It's Christian is a genius when it comes to this.
Well, and he also likes it, I think.
He loves it.
Well, he gets super creative with it.
Not only likes it.
Well,
he loves it.
But, you know, have you seen his artwork? He's an amazing artist. Yeah. He's a really, really, really amazing artist. And just a sweetheart of a guy. But he's the closest he ever came to me, to breaking through my denial, because he said, okay, you remember when we were in New York and we used to pay somebody $2,000
a month
to get our name out there in anything. You know, there's a fire in Brooklyn, you know, Michael Knight is like, take a picture. So he goes, this is our responsibility now. You know, the fact is, you don't have to pay somebody else to do it. You have to do it and you have to feed it.
Right.
But once you do, I mean, you're reaching You know, this number. But I don't know about you guys, but I think it's a double-edged sword because I remember when the internet was coming in, biggest mistake I ever made.
I remember when electricity was.
It sounds weird, right? But in the 90s, you know, it was coming in. A friend of mine was teaching me email and stuff, and there was this website. I can't remember. It was like something domain. Do you remember this? And it was a soap website, and it was just – it had been set up by somebody. I don't know where, but it was just a fan, but it was like – it was real fans. It was like what they really think, and I go on thinking, Tad, you know, they love me. I'm safe.
It was a chat room.
Oh, my God. Yeah. After like 20 minutes, I was so depressed. I couldn't go to work the next day, and they were like, don't read
– Nothing's changed,
the post.
By the way.
Don't read the
Nothing's
post.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about the moments that you have that are – that. Taught you humility or whatever, right? You can find that every day now.
Oh, you have to
you know. I think most actors, right? Whether it's real or fake, you have some sort of armor that you can put on when you're the most vulnerable because we put ourselves in vulnerable positions all the time get rejected all the time.
Right.
So you have to find some way to deal with it. Some people deal with it maybe more helpfully than others. But there are times, when you get a job and you're not getting that rejection on a regular basis, and you're like, oh, okay, I've transcended. I'm safe. And then, you know, I came on the show in 2006, and Twitter was not far away, but there was it was enough there that I could tell. I heard every day how ugly people thought I was.
Oh yeah,
and that
so bad.
That truly, like, I didn't take it personally because I wasn't hired to look good. I knew that. Like, I didn't take it personally. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm different than what they're used to. I'm going to win them over in other ways. I'm not worried about them. But it did, like, as I got more confident in who I was on the show, it tempered me to not get to a place where I was always grounded enough because I was like, hey, some people like me, some people don't. And that's
so it was a good thing. I mean, it was
I'm probably rationalizing.
No, it's true. I think you're. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
I apologize.
No. I could have lived without it probably, but at the same time, it gave me no illusions that I was like, this isn't real. This is something. I'm so lucky to be here. But you know what? As many people that like me. It didn't get me so high on my horse that I lost myself in it, you know?
I kind of wish I had some of that because I remember being, you know, just insecure as hell in college. I was the kid begging for sex and not getting it. And it's like – and 2 years later, I'm on this soap and I have a character that's jumping in out of bed with any need of moves, you know? And it's like cad to cad, blah, 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 blah. And I still have that, you know, the geeky kid somewhere in the back of the – you know, in the back, the back of the house. And I'm getting all of this like – just kind of adulation, and I think it's kind of I wasn't doing myself any favors. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like I think having the kind of balanced response that you get would have been a better thing for me. It's like don't take – because we had
–
No, Steve's over there going, no, I really am bitching.
We do a segment on our show called Mean Tweets. Yeah. We stole it from Jimmy Kimmel. Right?
Which sounds brilliant.
It's amazing. And on the Road is amazing.
Which sounds amazing.
So we tear ourselves down willingly and often. I get it, man. Like I'm glad. I also started when I was 26. Starting at 22 is different, right?
You're still a baby.
Yeah,
I have to
still
say,
a kid.
And that's the thing is like when you, this is what I would say to people coming up in our business now is like, although it's much more balanced, it really is. There's not as, the fire isn't as hot. I don't know how to say it. The fans are fantastic because you guys have proven that the fans are still there.
Oh, yeah,
they're being starved for content. But in terms of the network response to what we do, to the, you know, daytime, it's kind of cooled off a lot.
Well, it's just spread out. Like, there's smaller factions of people that are excited about different things. And if you get them all the people that are excited about the same thing in one room, that room's going to pop. The heat doesn't reach other factions.
But I remember being a young man and like, here's the lesson. It's like, don't believe your own press because you're going out there taking the bow. And, you know, we forget that there was an entire department at ABC that was up on 66th Street, I think, you know, the corporate building right off the park that was there to make you look good. You know what I mean? That's all they did.
Yeah. Right.
When you went out on the road, when your feet hit ground, that like basically made sure you were on a red carpet, you know, it's like, and when you're 23, 24, and you don't know anything else, it's like, wow, I guess I am pretty good at this. And it's not
I always had my dad tell me that anyway. Don't believe your own press.
Don't believe your own press. Yeah. It's not till you know it's not till you're like four decades later and you're basically, you know, you're watching Korean sitcoms.
North Korean.
I guess I wasn't very good at that.
That's amazing.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
To look back over the time, because the 80s and the 90s, I'm sure the 70s, look, I don't know because I wasn't around in
the
70s.
No, I think the 80s was the glory days.
The 80s and up to, I don't know, man.
Up to 2000, I think.
Yeah,
it was
I would
really
say somewhere in there was kind of the sorry, Bradford.
No, I missed it.
You missed the wave, baby.
You're lucky because neither of us would have a functioning liver if you were on the show with me at that time.
No Lysla, yeah, exactly.
At all. Yeah, like, yeah. But it's just so amazing to look back and be like, wow, that was cool.
We were
still a part of it. I don't want to be that old guy who looks back, but it was an amazing time. You know, and like you said, you don't know how lucky you are until now you look back and
the world
changes,
yeah.
Man, just for us going to the Emmys and the red carpet was five blocks long and you're at Radio City Music Hall and it's just like
– And you know what the key –
And it was celebrated, right? Daytime was celebrated.
I was going to say the key to it all, the thing that I'll never, ever, 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 ever forget is the fans. The fans there is absolutely nothing – Like, it's funny because I watch The Devotion. I'm watching Game of Thrones went off. And so every time you turn on, like, YouTube, there's all these, like, these – they're kids. You know, they started – they were, like, what? You know, like, maybe some of them were, like, 12 years old, 13 years old started. And they've grown –
You're talking about the actors.
And they've had this just amazing ride. You know what I mean?
Gosh.
But you see them, the way they talk, and they're still kind of – they're very, very bright-eyed and stuff. And it's just almost sort of – in shock by what's going on. And I kind of go, that's sort of what it felt like. And the reason is because the fans were just amazing. I mean, so fans.
But where do you go like from Game of Thrones, like a kid on that, right? Well, where do you go from there?
One of them is now the
Korean sitcoms.
And a Marvel is the lead of the Marvel movie, the Phoenix. She's
Sophie?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So she's,
well, that's pretty good.
I think they're going to be fine.
That's a good
But she'll
never be a part of something that historic, television-wise, or project-wise again, maybe.
I was going to say that there's like – this is the thing about soap fans. It's like – and I remember Susan Lucci teaching me. So,
hold on. Let's go to Susan real quick. How long did you work with her? Was she there the whole time?
Oh, yeah. Susan
never left?
No, never left. Susan
okay,
was always
so you,
there.
She was always there. And were you ever in her story?
No, did there was work? One time they got me
– So Susan – like with Tony Geary, right? I worked with Tony – I mean, a handful of times.
Yeah, exactly. You
right?
can count them on
But I'm like, there's Luke, and I'm not working with Luke.
I loved it. I got to tell you, what most people don't know about Susan is Susan's one of the most brilliant comedians I've ever worked with. Because she was always, you know, doing Erica, which was – she's branded as that. She was brilliant at it. There was no reason to change it. But I remember there was an episode where she was – they'd written a book called Raising Kane, and they were making a movie, and she wanted to – audition for her role. So she comes out, turns out that Erica Kane was the worst actress in the face of the planet. And there's this scene where Susan is just trying to, you know, to audition for this movie and just being just god awful. And I'm aware that I'm watching Susan playing Erica, an actress and being just, I mean, Carol Burnett funny. That's how good it was. And I just remember my jaw was on the floor. But I basically got – there was one time when I got to work with her. It was a fantasy episode. They wrote it out of sync with the rest of the show. And the fans had voted on something, and it was about the day that Tad Martin married Erica.
Yes.
So I got to work with her there. But, I mean, we were all sort of – my contact with Susan was always – was more personal. I went through some really, really dark times towards the end of the show, my divorce and stuff like that. And I will never forget. There was one thing that happened on set one day. I was just really having a bad day. And Susan didn't suffer fools gladly. She was fast. She knew what she wanted to do. She'd been doing it for 40 years. You know, she was no nonsense.
Yeah.
And, great lady, but you know, know your shit when you show up on set. And I was just having a really, really bad day. And Susan, I will never forget never bat an eyelash. He was like, and it was a friend of mine, Ian Buchanan, came up to me.
Ian, I love Ian Buchanan.
Ian came up to me years later. She goes, he goes, you don't remember that because you were having such a bad day. But Susan never moved. Never moved. She never blinked. She never said. Her attitude was, I'm going to stand. This is Michael. I've known him since he was a baby. And if it takes, if it takes him 15 takes to get through this, that's exactly what we're going to do.
No rolling eyes.
And
no
I've never, you know, and it just, I can't say enough about her.
Yeah. I remember seeing her right around, I was in college, 98 to 02 at NYU. And it was around the time that she played Annie Oakley in Annie Get Your Gun.
She was great.
Yeah.
She was hysterical.
Her and Tom Wopat, I think.
Yeah.
And I loved
it. I went down to see her two or three times. She was great.
Yeah. And I was still in school and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be in musical theater because that's what I was training for. And I was like, ah, soap stars on Broadway.
Now look.
And now I'm like, I'm a soap, give me
be
a Broadway.
Be careful.
Show.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Be careful. But I was gonna say about the fans, about Susan. This is one of the best stories I know about Susan as we were down. Remember we used to do those, Disney World, right?
Yep.
Where
yeah,
we Super Soap,
right?
Yeah.
We'd go down.
He
down.
Was at the tail end of that.
Well,
the
last couple
mind
of
you, like, we remember, it's like 30,000 fans and us, right, you know,
yeah.
on at MGM Grand. Yeah. But it's like, it's 95 degrees, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Susan had just written a book or something like that. And yeah. I remember, like, for some, those were the, in that one year, they would do two people on a dais. So it was me and Susan on that dais. And a person would come up and get an autograph from both.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, this person, this woman came up. Now, mind you, it's like, it's got to be, I mean, everybody's sweating to death.
Right. Because it's 100% humidity.
Well, yeah. And we're up on, you know, we're up four feet above a platform. They're down here. And so Susan's up behind this thing. This person came up.
It's so condescending, wasn't it?
With a book and goes, Ms. Lucci, I hope you'll sign this. I just don't, you know. And then she just burst into tears.
Yeah.
She just started to erupt in tears and she couldn't talk. And Susan, it makes me emotional to this day. Susan got up like a shot. She gets out of her chair and she runs down the length of this thing, down the stairs, the rope, and she comes and she's holding.
Well, she was probably wearing 12-inch heels.
High heels, like Susan,
in a tiny dress.
Tiny size. She's holding this woman, you know, basically saying, "Oh, honey, it's okay, it's fine." You know, it's like, you know, God bless you, you're so sweet, whatever. Yeah. And the guy that's the minder from Disney.
Right,
they're the guys with the stopwatch. He's like, you got to do, like, they make sure that
10
you're
seconds
doing.
Per person. You're
per person. We got an entire line to do. The minder comes down and he's going, Miss Lucci, and he's sort of tapping. And Susan turns around, all 5'3" of her, four of her, and goes, I'm going to be here for a while. Why don't you go get me some iced tea?
And
this guy just kind of he goes, and I'd never forgotten that. And I came and I saw her at work the next week, and I went, Susan, I was so touched. I'd never seen that sort of sense of just immediate humility, devotion to this person. And she goes, sweetheart, they love you for 20 years. All they want you to do is love them for 20 seconds. And I've never forgotten. And that is like, that is the secret. That's what makes the fans so wonderful. Like, literally, you're a part of their life.
Oh,
and they'll track you through the rest of yours. So, I mean.
Well, and, you know, we talk about this all the time. You know, there's an intimacy that exists between us and our fans that's unlike any other genre, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Spending,
right.
We're part of their daily routine.
Which is why they get to, and in a way, if you're doing that show enough, you're letting enough of yourself out, like the humor, sarcasm.
Yeah.
They do start to get a sense of you seeping through the corners of your character.
Yeah. Like, we'll meet almost five generations now of people. Like great-grandma, grandma, mom, daughter, kid. And you're like, this is unbelievable.
And not just, it's not just that the timing, too. It's what happens. It's like life evolves. It's not always great. And I remember, like, being at a thing and a woman came up to me, and I still can't say this without crying, is because I used to, like, come on stage and make jokes. Like, people would be like, what do you wear in bed? Oh, a little cologne. You know, it's like, you know, what's your acting secret? Calvin Klein, whatever. You know what I mean? And this woman came up to me and she goes, I just want you to know that my daughter passed away from leukemia about a year ago. And she was in the hospital for like the last 6 months of her life. And the staff knew that the only hour they could not come in that hotel, hospital, that hospital room for tests or something, or wheel her out to get a, you know, get something done, was on my children, and during from 1 to 2. And I remember asking her, say, who's your favorite character? She says, you know, I like Dad. And I can't, you know, people get into it. You're a part of their family. They relate to you. They remember where they were. They were watching us. Oh, this is when I was married. I was raising my kid. I was doing this. Yeah. And as far as they're concerned, every day you were part of their family, which makes them, now, God bless them, man.
Which is amazing.
It was a good ride. And I know I owe it all to them.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
You had a great ride on All My Children.
Yeah, I did.
You had
I really
great
did.
One.
And I have to say I got a good bow too. I mean, Agnes wrote a speech, and I could tell Aggie came out of retirement to write this. There was one speech, and I've always called it the friend's neighbor's family speech or something like that.
Okay,
because
yeah.
you know we edit a little bit. We get our script and go, can I cut this?
Yeah,
blah blah blah. Like, this is a little overwritten, I want to do this. And I remember getting this monologue. It was like, I think it was in the last episode, and the whole cast is standing around raising a glass or something.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at this thing going, I would not touch one letter in
isn't
this
that
thing.
Beautiful
and I and Aggie was on set, and I go, and I looked at her, and I picked up the script, and I go, that's you. She goes, yeah. So
that's so cool, man. Then you, when we worked together on Y&R, you were there for how long?
I was there for 10 months.
It was fun, man. We had a good time.
I loved working with you.
You worked a lot with Eileen Davidson.
I loved her.
You guys were amazing.
Loved her. Eileen
Eileen's
another one. Eileen's like Susan. It's like the people that are there a long time that they know the job.
She's super professional.
You know, like Peter Bergman used to say, is like, Eileen knows what she wants to do. She wants to get and do it. She doesn't want to waste time. And I said, really? She goes, yeah. She leaves the car running at the valet.
That's funny.
Yeah, I loved, and that's another thing. I got to work with Peter too,
because
I had known Peter all the way. Peter was playing Cliff on, so to spend some time with him too. He's a good man.
But
to work with you, that was supposed to be a character role. It was only supposed to be there for 8 episodes, and it rolled into 10 months.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's so great that we get to do this, because like that story about Susan Lucci, right? I mean, I've met Susan a few times, but I would never know her in the way you just described her.
Right? Yeah.
And I think that's so valuable in why we do this, not only to get to know you and the guests, but to hear that perspective, because I never had that perspective of Susan. I knew she was no nonsense, and that's really, and she was very nice to me. She was always very nice.
Like, she's a real lady.
Yeah, and that was it though, right? And the fans don't get to hear this part, like, oh wait, that's not really Erica Kane. That's Susan Lucci.
And I think part of it is protection too. You got to know that she's the number one. She was the number one
biggest
daytime star there ever was. And so I think there is a certain amount of protection, you know,
like
she can't afford to be herself with everybody, because, you know, she would just be swamped.
And there's not time to do that.
Yeah. And I got to know her. I was very, very blessed. I got to know her in a very – and same thing with David Canary. I mean, like, it's so funny because of all the people – here was David. He was playing a hard ass on that show for years. What did he win? Adam and Stewart.
Adam Stewart,
I think he won like 6 Emmys. And I have never – this is another – for both. I've never met a more talented, more gracious, just – a sweetheart of a man, and his story breaks my heart, because David passed away not too long ago. I remember talking to Mo, his wonderful, wonderful wife. He has 2 beautiful kids.
Oh, man.
But towards the end of the show, David had he was suffering from memory loss, and you could see it. And after 30 years with him, you know, I think if anybody deserved to go fishing, it was David. And it seems like I turned around and he was gone, you know.
So. Man.
There's a lot about, like I'm saying, there's a lot about this stuff. It's like, I really wish I had, there was a lot of stuff I took for granted I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we all go through that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you look back and you're like, man.
Well, the people that made you laugh, I mean, think about it. There are people like Julia Barr. I couldn't – literally, they would not write for me and Julia Barr, because Julia would make me so laugh so hard. You know, you get the guy coming over the room going, we're going to move these scenes to the end of the day if you kids don't, like, you know, they're talking to you like you're –
isn't it amazing when you get, like, chastised like a 5-year-old?
Yeah. Oh, it's a bad –
yeah, you're in school again.
Maurice and I would get chastised all the
time.
All the time. Guys, come on. This is not professional. I'm like, you're talking about 2 most professional people –
Oh, but Maurice does it. He goes after you. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like his mark is to get you to be the fool.
But at some point it reversed, right? So I could get him.
So you could get him.
Yeah. And he's like, Steve, please don't do it today. Don't do it. Don't do it. You know, and he was begging me not to.
Yeah, when he laughs, he's got that. It's over. He's got that giggle.
It's over, man.
Yeah. Seeing Sonny Corinto's giggle is a hoot.
Well, if you get a chance, we don't do blocking anymore, but if you ever get a chance, like, you got to ask him, say, do bad actor. Just do bad actor. He'll know what you're talking about, because when we were the kids, anybody under 30, when we used to do the dry block, you know what I mean?
You come in
in the morning, 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, we used to do camera, blocking for camera.
Right.
Full dress, you know, and makeup, get notes, and basically.
You would do dry, camera, and then
because they couldn't spend money on editing. They wanted to, like, in other words, they were renting editing space from themselves. The network, the show had to rent time in the ABC's editing bay.
Right.
So they wanted, there was a guy in a stopwatch, they wanted to get this down.
Yeah,
and so I call him, I'm the only person on the planet he lets call him Momo, so it's a badge of honor. Momo would, like, he hate, like, after, you know, 5 days a week, and he was living in Jersey at this point, and he's up at like 5:30 to get there to do dry blocking.
Just
driving him back. And so he would do bad actor, which is like, he had a way of hitting the exact wrong syllable in the exact wrong word, in a sense. And it was hysterical, and he would get me to the point where I would start laughing, you know, and I remember Jack Coffey coming down on me like a ton of Brits, going, "God damn it!" It's like, you kids, it's like, you're so lucky to have this. You don't realize, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and you can't look at him and go, I'm going, it's him,
right?
You know, it's not me,
right?
Yeah, that's so funny.
Oh man, that's one thing I miss about, like, when One Life to Live and All My Children went off the air. I miss the camaraderie of being part of that ABC team.
Yeah.
Do you know, of course, you know, we're so lucky that GH is still there, but I missed I miss traveling with you guys. Like, that.
It was kind of cool. Like, the Super Soap thing is like,
we get to,
because you guys were always on in our studio. You know what I mean? So I get to, oh, there's so and so. I'm checking in. It's like, there's Steve. Yeah. So, like, you don't see him for 6 months, and there we are, you know, in the middle of MGM Grand. It's like, dude, how are you?
Yeah.
And people, I'll never forget, like, people on your show, like, I brought my parents, you know? My parents, who were like, so freaking slow. I mean, I know glaciers that move faster than I did. And I remember bringing my parents and introducing, you know, people on different shows to, like, I remember Torsten was on One Life to Live, Torsten Kay.
Yep.
And I remember, and the guy just fell all over himself, like, just, like, saying hi to, like, my family and stuff. I've never forgotten how cool that was.
It's good people, man. It's good people. And you're right, though, because it felt like, even though we were on the West and the East, it was still...
Yeah, we were still part of it. We were in the lineup.
We were still... We were in the game. Game playing, you know, and it was a lot of fun.
But I was always aware that, like, you guys are the GH guys are the stars, man. They're living large out there in LA.
Living large.
The palm trees, yeah, exactly. You know, like we're the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I lived in Beverly Hills for a while.
But I always admire. There's the couple times that we did travel together. Your graciousness with everybody that you came in contact with was it was something that I noticed and something I brought up to him today too. Like, whatever track you were on and lessons you learned, you gave everything you could to people that came up to you.
You're very sweet to say that, but I think...
And even kissed a couple people in the mouth.
He's got the... Oh, yeah, no, it's like... I'd come off and Catherine would be like, really? I got the same thing that you do, which is basically the fans would be so... fun. You know what I mean? They would be so into stuff. They remember shit that I was like, you know, we'd be on a show doing this idea, like, who did, like, I would be answering questions doing a trivia thing is like, who was Tad's third? I don't remember, you know, and they know everything.
Yeah.
And you meet them at these fan events and they're so energetic. They're so happy. It's kind of like you feed off them. You know what I mean? Hey, look, how hard is it to be loved? You know,
it's the best thing.
And I've always seen you, like, you're very, very good at coming back with, you know, with the humor and stuff and opening yourself up to people, which I think is
We have so much. This, because there's some people who don't like to do that stuff, but we like really love it.
Yeah.
We're like, when do we fly out?
Yeah.
We're going to go have some fun and meet people and just have a great time.
Yeah.
You know, so
I get the I remember just like and I, there, you get to know the different types, the different groups, like, okay, for instance, and you get to know it because you do what we do for a long time.
Right.
And you get to know, like, there's the husband that comes along that's right. Like, he's the guy that drove the car, and he's like, he's never watched all my shows. He didn't watch a show.
Right.
He has no idea. All he knows is that he loses his wife for an hour every day, right. And that this is the guy that's yes. responsible for it. You know, mm-hmm. And he's like, he's just kind of sitting in the back right. like that.
And that's what
I used to love those guys. I'd be like trying to like,
I'm
trying
like, to, dude, get over here.
Get over here. Like, so, yeah. I'm like, you hate me, don't you? You really hate me. Yeah. Like, watch this. Oh, and I have to, another thing that's just like, again, if you're in this industry long enough, your humility check is in the mail. One of the funniest, and this happened with Maurice too. You got to ask him because it was in Disneyland. We had a day off. We go down to Disneyland, messing around the Magic Kingdom, whatever. And I'm trying to tell him a joke that a friend of mine told me. I'm just, and this guy comes up with a camera and his wife.
Yeah.
And he's saying, excuse me, would you mind to take the picture?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And I'm like, I'm still trying to tell the joke, trying to be Mr. Charm, you know, how's that steak? And I right. go and I put my arm around the guy's wife, and then nothing happens. And about 30 seconds, I look over and I realize he wanted me to take him. He's from Germany.
Right.
He's never heard of a soap before.
He's a photographer.
And he wants somebody to snap a picture of him and his wife in front of Cinderella's castle. And I'm copping a free feel, you know?
He's
and
like,
I looked over, and there's Maurice is just losing him. Losing his mind. He's laughing so hard. And I was like, okay, yeah, there's no way you can talk your way out of that.
No, yeah. Especially if you don't speak German.
I'm a dick. And it's like, you don't understand. I'm a TV star.
I am somebody here.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
That's
well, dude,
amazing.
This was amazing, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I know you were hesitant in doing this. But
I would do it for you.
Is exactly why we do it.
Yes.
Because an hour and a half flew by. And we're just kind of chit-chatting about life.
You will always be one of my favorite people in the penis industry. And I told this to you before we started. Yeah. He texted me the other day and I said, nobody's going to care about hear old stories from me. Nobody's going to care about this. And then I realized it was you asking me, and I said I texted him back, and I said, man, if it's you, I'll do it naked and give you 20 minutes to
Well, you're not naked, so yeah. You can read
No, thank God
part.
For that. I remember when the date.
The video would be a lot better.
That's one thing. My one complaint about you is, would you please just like move away from the gym just a little bit, because you screw up the learning curve. You know what I mean? He gets that.
The bell curve.
The bell curve.
Has changed.
He pumps the bell curve.
That's it. Yeah. He's got, I'm trying, dude. I got to stay young, man.
He's got the arms.
I'm not getting any younger, Michael.
I'm not even going to go there. Seriously,
Bradford and I are, it's like, are years apart. We look the same age.
I'm at home by myself with my dog, you know, and I'm like taking on my clothes to take a shower, and I look down and I swear my dog's looking at me like, really? Like, don't you got any respect for yourself?
Do something. No.
What does the freaking dog do?
Yeah.
No, it's funny.
It barks a lot. That's why we're not at Michael's house.
This is the one thing I would say is, like, as I say, I was a really, really insecure kid in college and stuff. And it was – that was one thing about our job I can get over. Like, for 4 years, certainly, you know, when you're 23, 27, I mean, your job is literally to take off your shirt. We used to – Cameron Matheson was one of the nicest guys.
Let me tell you something.
Cameron Matheson is more beautiful on the inside than he's one of the sweetest men in the world.
He's Canadian.
But there is that.
Yeah.
But he took his clothes off so much on the show.
Yes.
His name was Snaps because they got tired of sewing the buttons back on because girls would do the they would peel off the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, just save some money. Put on Snaps.
Well, there was a reason for that because he was in phenomenal shape.
Oh, he looked like
he was amazing.
Like the bat. I remember thinking, I was saying a friend of mine, you know, that Batman outfit with Val Kilmer is like,
yeah,
basically somebody threw some plastic on camera.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
It's so funny because I run into him of all places at Disneyland with our families.
That's funny.
Often, which is very strange.
Like I say, one of those amazing. Yeah. He and Rebecca over the years, sweet, sweet people. And I don't know about you, I'm sure you had this moment too when you were a kid and you were starting out. Because you walk in and you're an actor. It's like, just God, get me through this without making a fool of myself, basically.
Sure.
And I remember doing it, and there was one day, maybe after like 6 weeks, 7 weeks, where I was walking out. We used to have that studio on 67 and Columbus Avenue, and we used to go out the loading. We shared a loading dock with the U.S. Postal Office. It was on Broadway. So I'd go out the loading dock, and I remember walking out and looking at the sunshine across on the trees across the street going, wow, I can't believe I was ever intimidated by this.
Mm.
And it was just this feeling of like just – falling backwards into something really, really soft and supportive. And it was just, it was an amazing life. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anyway,
man.
Thank you guys very, very
no,
much.
No, Michael Knight. Thank you. Michael E. Knight. Thank Michael, you.
The
so
way you
much,
say buddy. It, I always like want the car. When you say
Michael E. Knight.
Every time he sees me, we know it's never Mike. Hey, Michael, how are you? It's like, Michael Knight!
That's why I yelled at him. Michael Knight!
He's a very formal fellow.
Yeah, I keep that's waiting right, for like him to cue the orchestra.
How about not like, Mr. Knight?
You don't want to God, say please, that. No,
I'm Michael Knight.
The white hair throws people. I told you, it's like how people come up to me in Ralston and go, did you go to school in Florida? You know. So, yeah. Anyway, thank you guys.
Thank you, brother. Have a great day. Thanks, man.